Here it comes. Polaris now. End zone wide open. Touchdown, Terrell Stickmill. Harris in the shotgun. Looks to his left. Now he is brought down. Justin Hickman gets to Trevor Harris. Polaris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Polaris. Little screen here. And Sinkfield's going to score. There's the dagger. It's officially over.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
This is a good time to record, eh, pal?
Yep, right after a big win.
We are just a few hours removed from Hamilton's squashing of the Argos. During halftime, it was a hot game out there today. So at halftime, I did something I don't normally do, and that is go down to the concourse and just hang out down there. Standing in the shade with a couple of friends, and who happens to run across me? A couple people I'm pretty sure you've met, Jason and Neil from the SOB Facebook page. Haven't had a chance to meet them before. We have tried numerous times, and mostly my fault, where I'm either late getting somewhere or whatever reason it was. We just never had a chance to cross paths. Finally got a chance to cross paths today. Had a nice talk with the both of them at halftime. Two super cool dudes who started this Facebook group to sort of bring Argos fans and Ticats fans together to sort of allow us to get to know one another better. And there's a picture on Twitter of Neil and myself, both with giant smiles on our faces. And this was even for him. I think the Ticats were 27-1 at halftime. So just a couple of cool dudes, and just sort of glad to finally put faces with names and stuff that I've been talking to for a while.
Yeah, I'm surprised you never met them before, because I know Jason always goes to the games. So yeah, I met them in Moncton a couple years ago when the Stamps and Ticats played. And we got together at one of the old Triangle, a local bar there, and had some drinks and had a good time. They're really nice dudes. And I'm glad you got to meet them, because they're good guys.
You know, I don't know if you saw, but they were featured on Ticats.ca this week.
Oh, really? I saw that Jason had his Ticat room shown.
I guess, as I was talking to him at halftime today, at the time, whoever did that feature said to him, you said you had a friend that's an Argos fan that sort of helped you rebuild your man cave thing. And he said, yeah. And they said, well, what, maybe Labor Day you guys would be interested in doing a little feature. And yeah, so go on the Ticats website. There's about a 3.5 to 4 minute video of the two of them. It's really, really cool.
All right, I'll check that out.
That's all nice and good. Let's just get into the meat right now, man. Just, wow, what a game by the Ticats today, 42-12. I could cue up the audio from last week where I said the Ticats would kick the living out of the Argos or whatever it was that I said. But I did not expect a 30-point walloping. Maybe two touchdowns, maybe 17 points, but this was just a clinic that they put on today. And once again, a statement win that they established themselves as perhaps the team to beat in the CFL, and definitely the team to beat in the East Division. Just a wonderful performance all the way around.
Yeah, they really stuck it to the Argos. They came out strong. Their first half was just phenomenal. You know, they kind of lulled a bit in the third, but they didn't have the ball much either in the third. You know, Toronto held on to it for a long time, but didn't really do much with it. You know, on the first drive, the Argos have the ball. Hickman gets a sack. They start out well on defense, and then they get the ball. They get some good passes. They got a pass to Sinkfield, to Tasker, and then to Tolliver for the TD, and then they just took off from there. And they're still not doing it. I mean, they're dominating without a run game. So if they ever get that run game going, you know, look out, because this team is on fire.
When they start out hot, it's almost like they're unstoppable. When they get rolling early, and I said this to the people I was sitting with, just it felt like as soon as they scored that first touchdown that easily, the worry for me just sort of vanished. I figured this was going to be a butt kicking, and a butt kicking it was. And when we're talking about players, we got to talk about the quarterback, because he right now is probably, he's definitely the East Division front runner for MOP, but Zach Caleros was once again magnificent, once again making Marty York look foolish for earlier in the season, calling him average. He was 26 of 38 for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. I believe he now he did lead the league in passing yards going into the game. I believe he now leads the league in touchdown passes. Just what can't this guy do?
Yeah, it's career high for yards. He doesn't throw a lot of picks either. So, you know, if you can throw four touchdown passes a game and no picks, you're going to win the game. So this guy is just impressing me game after game after game. He's coming into his own. You know, I'm sure Ken Austin is helping him a lot, former QB. So I'm not even sure if we've seen the best of Claros yet. When we do, he'll be by far the best QB in the league.
You know the competitor he is. He does not think that this is good enough this game. He had did you see that weird flip touchdown that he almost had to, I believe it was Matt Coates, where he was scrambling and then did the underhanded pass?
Yeah, kind of remind me of like how Doug Flutie used to do it back in the day. Just, you know, a little underhand toss, you know, do what you have to do to get the ball into the receiver's hands. But, you know, I thought Coates could have caught that ball too, so.
I think it was more, you know, when you play football, you're not really used to the backs, having backspin like that on it, so maybe kind of confused him. And he was in the air. It was a tough catch, one he definitely could have had. But, you know, a play like that, Claros is going to look back and go, we could have had more. You know what I mean? Like, he is never seems to be satisfied, and this guy is just a competitor, and he's starting to make a name for himself as perhaps the best quarterback in the league right now.
In the one play that I really liked was the beautiful long bomb toss to Sinkfield early in the game. He got hit like as soon as he tossed it, and it was just like Sinkfield made a great catch, but it was like caught it with the tips of his fingers, but it was perfectly in stride. The toss was made perfect, and I was just like overwhelmed with how well that toss was.
Well, I'm glad you bring up Terrell Sinkfield, because let's move on to those receivers today. Everyone was contributing. Terrence Tolliver had 6 catches for 90 yards and a touchdown. Luke Tasker had 7 catches for 105 yards. Taquan Underwood had 3 catches for 36 yards and a TD, and Terrell Sinkfield had 5 catches for 110 yards and 2 touchdowns again. You've been a very big Terrell Sinkfield fan since pretty much we started this show, and he sat out a few weeks due to quote-unquote poor performance, and ever since he's been reinserted into the lineup, he has almost been unstoppable. Heap praise on the guy that you've been big on since day one.
You know, I was really hard on him last year, I believe, when he was turning that punt or that kickoff, and he hot dogged. He was looking at the Argos bench, and he got tackled because he slowed down a bit. Do you remember that?
Yep, I absolutely remember that. It was the game where I think the Ticats lost on that Chad Owens long bomb. The game probably would have been over if Sinkfield doesn't sort of hot dog in a score. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I went off on him. I said he should have been cut, just going crazy because I was so upset with that play. But, you know, this year he's just totally turned it around. Like, he seemed to have grown up a bit, and his play on the field has just been great. I didn't see a drop-off really in his play. I didn't see a reason why he should have been taken off the field. But I guess since we have just so much talent, I'm just so high on him right now. I don't know when Grant and Fantus comes back if he's going to have a starting spot, but I think he should.
Yeah, there is going to be some tough decisions to be made, especially when Bakari Grant comes back, because all of the American receivers right now are just killing it out there. Like, I don't know how else to put it, to be honest with you. Everyone is making plays, regardless of where they are on the field. This might not be a household name type of receiving core, but this might be the most balanced, deep, and dangerous receiving core in the CFL right now.
Yeah, I have to agree. Everyone's making plays, you know. Underwood was a start at the start of the season. He got taken out, and he gets plays back in, and he's making plays. It's just a great unit of receivers that we have right now.
Speaking of receivers, there was a lot of talk coming into this game about the Argos quote-unquote big three of Torrey Gurley, Kevin Elliott, and our buddy Vidal Sassoon / Vidal Hazelnut. Mm-hmm. And today they were held, the three of them combined had 13 catches for 131 yards and a touchdown, pretty much held in check, to be honest with you. Hazelton, who came in as the fourth leading receiver in the league, had 4 catches for 27 yards and a long of 12. They were, I won't say shut out, obviously, because they did put up some numbers, but they were pretty much shut down and completely held in check by what was essentially a patchwork Ticats secondary, what with Johnny Sears being out and Mike Daly being out. It was just a good performance, and those guys just really didn't have a lot of chance to do anything.
No, they've been great all season, and we completely, you know, didn't, you know, like you said, we didn't completely shut them down, but, you know, the whole offense for the Argos just looked pretty bad the whole game. They didn't really get anything going. They didn't score that many points. Like you were saying, this whole season, you don't think that the Argos are a great team, and I think that they might be showing that right now with the performance that they had against the Eskimos, and then this week against the Ticats. They just haven't had it in those two games, and maybe they won't have it going forward.
They are not an elite team. I've been saying that for weeks, and I think people are finally going to start to come around on this. I wrote an article article last week on Three Down Nation about why I thought the Ticats were simply better than the Argos, despite what at the time they had the same record. They're both 6-3. And it was all based on numbers. You look at it, the Ticats going into this game had outscored the Argos by nearly 100 points. They had allowed 50, 60, or 70. I don't have the numbers in front of me, obviously, but some ridiculous high total of numbers. They allowed fewer than the Argos. You know, they had beaten down the Argos. The Argos had all these comebacks, and I kept saying that the Argos get down against these teams, and yeah, they make comebacks against Winnipeg and Saskatchewan and BC, but against what I consider the top tier teams in the league, Calgary, Edmonton, Hamilton, they haven't done that. And today again, they were down 27-1 at halftime and did not make the comeback. They are they're a good team. They're going to make the playoffs, and this very well could have been an East Final preview today. Even head coach Scott Milanovic said, they're a good team, but they're not a great team. And I think, you know, it's finally time that everyone will sort of get on the bandwagon that I've been on for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they're not doing it on offense anymore, and they're the ninth ranked pass defense in the league. So they're getting exposed right now, and, you know, the Ticats knew that they had a weak secondary and they attacked it today.
This wasn't a perfect game for the Ticats, though, and it rarely ever is. Penalties once again reared their ugly head, 17 for 152 yards, kind of negated by the fact that the Argos had 14 for 130. But the one thing I kind of want to bring up, there was three unnecessary roughness calls on the Ticats on one play. I believe it was in the third quarter. It may have been in the fourth. Either way, it was in the second half. It was kind of mind-blowing. There was a scrum. There was not necessarily a fight, but how you had a better view or a more nuanced view than I did sitting at home watching on the TV. Were the Argos not called for something there?
Yeah, it boggled my mind too. It's hard to tell in that there was like such a, you know, it was like a pile of humanity, but I don't understand how, you know, at least one Argo player doesn't get called, because they're both shoving and probably both saying, you know, nasty things towards each other. So I don't understand how three Ticats gets called for a penalty and not one Argo.
Jermaine Gabriel got called for unnecessary roughness on, like, I believe it was the very next play. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like maybe the refs were trying to take control of the game. But yeah, like you said, at the time, like, how do three players from one team get called for unnecessary roughness? Like, they weren't just throwing haymakers at air, you know, like, they were goaded into things. And I bring up Jermaine Gabriel, and I just felt the entire game he was doing things. It seemed to me that he was trying to get Ticat players to lose their cool. He would tackle guys and then lay on them. Like, he laid on Luke Tasker on a tackle for a good 3, 4, 5 seconds, just laying on his head. Like, what the hell are you doing? And then later, I believe it was Brandon Banks, he was getting tackled, and then, you know, he jumped on at the end. It was just, he was just acting like an ass.
Yeah, I'm not sure who it was, but there was a touchdown early in the game. It might have been Tolliver. No, I think it was Sinkfield, actually, scored a touchdown. And he was running in the end zone, and an Argo player stuck out his leg, tried to trip him. Now, I'm not sure who that was, but that was a dick move as well. So if anyone knows that, shoot me on Twitter and tell me who that was, because that was not cool. Not cool at all.
Yeah, it seemed like all game they were doing things, the Argos, that is. They were doing things that were trying, and not necessarily to goad the Ticats into sort of losing their cool, but there was just like these little things. Like, Kevin Elliott had a couple of catches this game, and it seems like every time he catches the ball, he does this ball spin thing. And there was one time, it was 1st and 20, he picks up 8, 9, 10 yards or something, stands up and spins the ball. And it's like, buddy, it's 2nd and 10, and you're out there acting like you just scored a touchdown. You're celebrating these menial accomplishments. And then later in the game, he did the same thing on, you know, admittedly, he picked up 20 or so yards on, I believe it was a 3rd and 5, but it was negated by a penalty. So, like, you just look foolish when you do these things. And all these Argos receivers, maybe with the exception of Gurley, I haven't really seen him act like a jerk much. They just seem to have this attitude of assholeness, just, you know, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I think him and Hazleton especially, like, you know, I think Hazleton got a penalty for being a bit of an ass in an earlier game. So they just seem to be a very cocky bunch, and, you know, they've been playing well, but they're not the best in the league or anything like that. So they need to calm down with that stuff.
Speaking of needing to calm down, did they show on TV at all the near, how do I put this? Let's just say there was nearly a brawl on the sidelines between Craig Butler and our good buddy, Ricky Foley. Was there any of that shown on television?
I saw something to that effect. I saw Ricky Foley yelling at someone. I didn't know who it was, but he seemed pretty pissed off about something. So.
Well, he was probably pretty pissed off about the fact that he was completely skunked today. Absolutely nothing. No tackles, no sacks. He pretty much could have sat on the bench and had just as much impact on the game as he did being on the field. Just completely and utterly shut down. And my understanding is after this little skirmish, he was benched for the next series of plays. And it makes me wonder if Scott Milanovic maybe isn't a big fan of Foley's. They allowed him to walk in free agency. Canadian defensive ends don't usually leave. It's a pretty sought-after commodity, and they let him just leave to go to Saskatchewan after they won the Grey Cup. And yeah, they brought him back this year, but I got to wonder if maybe Milanovic is not a huge fan of the York University attendee.
I'm not sure what the relationship is, but you can't blame the guy for not being a fan of Mr. Foley.
So we had some bold predictions, like we always do. Unfortunately, we both got them wrong. I had the Ticats defense scoring twice, and that obviously didn't happen. Didn't need to happen. You know, the offense scored, I believe, 5 touchdowns today. So defense did its part, but they didn't get on the scoreboard. You had the offensive line giving up 0 sacks. They gave up 2, but even that was...
Now, was that late in the game that they gave up 2?
Yeah, honestly, I'm not sure. It didn't look like they had any during the game, did it?
Yeah, I swear they put up the stats and they said 0 sacks, like late in the third or something.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I missed it, but if the stats say 2, then I guess they got 2.
The stats say 2. I will go back. If I'm incorrect, we will correct it next week on the show. And if you got one right, you got one right. But I want to talk about that offensive line because they were, you know, even in giving up 2 sacks, they were phenomenal today, giving Zach Kolaros a ton of time. Any pressure Kolaros was under was more due to the Argos actually finding a way to cover receivers as opposed to the line just letting guys come through. Just an excellent game all around by that offensive line, dealing with the loss of one of their biggest contributors in Ryan Bomb. And I was super impressed with the way they played today.
Yeah, they put in O'Neal there and he filled in, did a great job filling in. So after probably the worst performance of the year by the O-line last week, you know, they had so much trouble with the Alouettes that they come back and put in a great performance this week. And it's great to see, because if Kolaros has time in the pocket, he's going to do some damage like he did today with 400 yards passing and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's going to pick defenses apart if he gets that much time. And I just think all around the team today, it was a great bounce back win. You know, they looked less than sharp against Montreal, but this was a huge bounce back game for them. They just looked like they were unstoppable from pretty much the opening whistle. Aside from that, you know, lull they had in the second half, it was just a great performance by the Ticats. Another Labor Day victory. You know, we're both happy, so it was a good day. Good day to be a Ticats fan.
Yeah, it was great. And even with a little bit of a lull in the third quarter from the offense, they, you know, they ended the game with that touchdown. So, and they never looked terrible on offense or anything. They're always moving the ball. They didn't really score any points in the third quarter. So it's good to see, you know, pretty much full 60 minutes of solid football. Also, I want to say, you know, it's good to see Hickman get some sacks too. I know he's been turning it on late last couple of games, but 2 sacks in this one. You know, Norwood is out, so it's just great to see him playing great football again.
It really feels like he's sort of back in the groove that he had in 2011, doesn't it? Like, it took him about a year, it looks like, to sort of get everything going again, but he looks like he's about to become, to reassert himself as the dominant rush end that he was back before he went to the NFL.
Yeah, and also on the special teams, I've been noticing King a lot lately. You know, he had the block punt today, and he's been making tackles on special teams. Just a shout out to him. I think he's been doing a great job.
Yeah, it tells you how great this team played today when they get a blocked punt that I'm pretty sure resulted in a touchdown drive, and we didn't even bring it up until near the end of this segment. So just an all-around great team performance.
Oh, yeah, and it was Underwood that was almost tripped in the end zone. Correction there.
So moving on, there's a bit of Ticats news to talk about this week. They made a trade. They sent 2014 All-Star offensive lineman Brian Simmons to Edmonton for a 7th-round pick in 2017. I guess I sort of understand where they're coming with the trade. They have a plethora of offensive linemen. Simmons had not seen the field. I'm not even sure if he's played at all this year. He seemed to be the odd man out in the tackle rotation. Jake Olson, Jeremy Lewis, and Joel Figueroa seem to be the guys they're going with there. And he was, you know, moved into guard last year, and the Ticats has now made the 3 interior line positions national positions. So he kind of seemed to just, you know, not really have a place with this team. So while I'm bummed because I really liked Brian Simmons, I thought he was an underrated player out here, I sort of understand the move.
Yeah, first I didn't really. I thought that Simmons, you know, was great depth on the offensive line if someone gets injured, and it would have been great to keep him, but you know, I guess the numbers game kind of happened. Maybe it was a bit of a salary cap dump, so Austin knows best, and I'm not going to question him, but I was pondering the move at first when I first heard about it.
Yeah, I'm more bummed out than I am angry, because again, like I said, I sort of understand it. You know, with Simmons gone, that leaves, I believe it's 5 players remaining from the team that Austin inherited in 2013. Andy Fantuz, Bakari Grant, Tim O'Neill, Mike Filer, and Peter Diakowski, I believe, are the only players that were on this team before Kent Austin became the general manager and head coach. That just tells you how much of the roster he has turned over and how this team is his team now. This is very much, you know, his stamp is on this organization. And, you know, it also kind of gives you some respect for how many players that they have, you know, swapped out over the last couple of years and still been able to get to the Grey Cup in 2013 and then get to the Grey Cup again last year and look poised to possibly make a run to get back to the Grey Cup this year. Just incredible stuff from Ken Austin.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years now. Like you said, he's taken to them to two Grey Cups. And right now, this is, like I said, totally his team. So maybe this is the year we get over the hump, but we don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Simmons wasn't the only trade this week. The Edmonton Eskimos traded quarterback Matt Nichols to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for a conditional 7th-round pick. Not entirely surprising. Nichols was pretty much done in Edmonton after they had benched him for James Franklin, and the Bombers need quarterbacks because Robert Marv is hurt, and Drew Willey is still hurt, and Brian Brohm is terrible. So it's sort of a win-win trade. You know, Edmonton gets maybe something for a guy that they weren't going to be bringing back. Nichols is free agent at the end of the year, and the Bombers may have found a guy to start while Willie recovers from his injury.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, how long Willie's supposed to be out.
I think it's still another, you know, month or so, perhaps. Oh. He's been out now since they played here, and I believe the initial diagnosis was like 6 to 8 weeks, and I think he's been out for now 4, so maybe another 4 or so.
Nichols didn't impress me in Edmonton. He had a rough go there this year, kind of the whipping boy for the Edmonton fans, but, you know, he's a better option than Brian Brohm, that's for damn sure. And if Marv is injured, you can't go with him, and I don't know that Marv is the answer either. So, you know, I guess we'll see. Maybe he just needed a new team to run with, but he's better than any of the options that they have in Winnipeg. So hopefully he can turn it up and help the Bombers out a bit until Willie gets back.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp as you. I have not been overly impressed with Nichols this year, and he to me is now the poster boy for why we need to just stop talking about quarterback wins as a relevant stat. He is, according to the statisticians, he's 5-2 this year as a starter, but he was yanked from at least 2 of those games, and he has not been the reason really that they won any of those contests, Edmonton that is. So let's just not mention quarterback wins as being relevant to whether a quarterback is good or not, because he's 5-2 as a starter this year, and you're hard pressed to find one game where you're saying Matt Nichols is the reason the Eskimos won.
Yeah, I think he had one really good game, and that was about it. And then the other ones, he probably got pulled, and he just didn't impress. So hopefully he has a better career in Winnipeg than he did in Edmonton, but I have my doubts.
The Alouettes made another coaching change, firing offensive coordinator Turk Schoenert and naming Ryan Dinwiddie and, I cannot believe that I'm saying this, Anthony Calvillo co-offensive coordinators. And Calvillo, who just started coaching this year, was the wide receivers coach start the season. When Jim Popp took over as head coach 2 weeks ago now, I guess, Calvillo became quarterback's coach, and now he will be the game day play caller for the Montreal Alouettes. I don't really know what to think. It kind of feels like maybe they are grooming him to be their head coach next season. I cannot understand. Anthony Calvillo was a great player, but this seems awfully quick for him to be jumping into the offensive coordinator position, and especially to be calling plays in the game. That just seems way too fast to me.
Yeah, it seems like they're panicking a bit in Montreal. I mean, Jim Popp comes back, he's the head coach again, then he fires the offensive coordinator, which I heard that, you know, there was a lot of, you know, complaining about Turk Schoenert about the plays he was calling, but, you know, Dinwiddie and Calvillo splitting the offensive coordinator job is kind of weird to me. Maybe Jim Popp has, you know, a little bit too much faith in Calvillo. You know, he's quarterback for so many years, and he was so great for so many years as the quarterback, but he's not, like you said, he's only been a coach for
half a season.
So, and he's already calling the plays. I'm not sure if he called the plays as quarterback in his career before. Are you aware of that or not?
I think prior to the arrival of Mark Trestman, I think for a few years there with Don Matthews, Calvillo was given the reins to call his own plays. But now we're going back. And look, before we say anything, we obviously both agree that Anthony Calvillo was he's definitely in the top 5 or 3 of quarterbacks in CFL history. He was a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. But yeah, I just think this is too soon. That's basically where I stand with this. It just seems way too soon.
No, great player doesn't equal great coach. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the next couple weeks, because I don't know how great Dinwiddie is as an offensive mind either. So I said probably last week that, you know, this is if things go really downward for the Alouettes this year, I think that it's going to lay on Jim Popp. So this better go well for the sake of his job, I think.
Wasn't Dinwiddie the offensive coordinator going into last season, and then he was sort of replaced essentially by... It might have been Schoenert, although I'm pretty sure Schoenert just got the official title of offensive coordinator this offseason, but I'm almost positive Dinwiddie was the offensive coordinator going into the last year, or maybe it could have been the year before. In one of these years, Dinwiddie was the offensive coordinator in Montreal, and they got off to one of those horrible starts like they have the last few years, and then they stripped him of his title and gave it to someone else, and then last year, I remember they were, 1-7, I think it was, and they brought in Jeff Garcia. They brought in all these coaches, and Turk Schoenert was one of the coaches they brought in, and everyone was raving about all the work that they had done with John to Crompton and getting that quarterback position settled. And now all of a sudden, after a year or so, Schoenert is no longer a good coach. I'm just not sure what to really make of it. Maybe you're right, and this is just like a desperate attempt by Jim Popp to sort of try to save things, and it just doesn't seem to be working.
You know, Jim Popp is so used to being at the top of the league that he just maybe he just gets so worried that he does rash decisions. Now, I think that last year maybe was Tom Higgins was the coach. They had an offensive coordinator in the preseason, and he got fired because he was drinking or something on the job. And then maybe Dinwiddie got placed in. I think that might have been it.
Oh, I think you're right. I can't remember who that was now. I'm sure someone will correct us at some point. But yeah, I think you're right. He got fired like 2 days into training camp or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a big shit show there last year, and it seems to be this year again. And we'll get into it later with the Marsh stuff. But you got to question what's going on there in Montreal right now.
Is it possible that the game has just passed Jim Popp by? He's been a great general manager for a very long time. He's kept Montreal in the playoffs ever since they've been there. He was responsible for building that Baltimore team that won a Grey Cup and then moved to Montreal. And Montreal, was for the longest time, were the class of the league. But I'm just sort of, you know, sometimes guys have an expiration date, and maybe Jim Popp's is coming. You know, he did get lucky in being the general manager of Montreal when the Ticats pretty much couldn't get out of their own way. Ottawa, when they were the Renegades, were just terrible. The Argos would go from good to bad, stay bad, and get good for a couple seconds and go back. I think maybe his dominance came as the fact that the rest of the division was just crap, as opposed to maybe his team being that good. They were good, don't get me wrong. They won three Grey Cups, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that by October, they were already clinched in first place and didn't really have to worry about it. And they were shoo-in to get to the Grey Cup most years.
They did lose a lot of Grey Cups. So they also had a man named Calvillo at quarterback, so maybe that saved him a lot. And I don't think that he's a bad GM now or anything. I'm not sure if the game's passed him by. You know, if he gets fired from the Alouettes, they'll be plenty of teams lining up to hire him. So, you know, maybe it's just the quarterback situation. They have Marsh right now is just horrific. And we don't know. Cato had his flashes of greatness, but we don't know if he's going to be a long-term solution. So we shall see how this all turns out.
Speaking of Grey Cups, you brought that up. A little report came out this week that, while not official yet, it looks like the 2016 Grey Cup will be in Toronto and the 2017 Grey Cup will be in Ottawa. That means that the game will not be in Hamilton until at least 2018 and maybe even later, considering maybe they don't want to go, you know, three straight in Ontario. But does this at all surprise you? It doesn't really surprise me.
No, I think John Torrey on two separate occasions mentioned that the Grey Cup was going to be in Toronto in 2016 at public events. So, you know, I'm pretty sure he knew for a long time. He let the cat out of the bag a long time ago. It doesn't surprise me at all. And the Ottawa Grey Cup just lines up with the 150th birthday of Canada. So that makes perfect sense. And, you know, Ottawa hasn't been in the league for a while. They get the Grey Cup back there in a newly renovated stadium. I was the Grey Cup in 2004 in Ottawa. It was a great time. So I'm sure they'll throw a great party for the league. And you heard the rumblings that Braley had a deal, you know, three Grey Cups in 12 years when he took over the Argonauts. So that I guess he'll be out next year, but Toronto's getting their share of Grey Cups in the last 10 years. So
yeah,
it's not surprising.
No, and I know a lot of Ticats fans are going to be upset that it's not in Hamilton, and why does Toronto deserve to get it? And yeah, the Argos have now had two. Well, you know, if this turns out to be true, they will have two in four seasons. And they also had the one in 2007. But people seem to forget that before 2007, the last Grey Cup in Toronto was 1992. So they did go a long way without getting one. And I understand the frustration amongst Ticat fans and Hamiltonians who want the Grey Cup here. To them, I say, don't worry. It will happen. It will happen sooner than you think. And we will all be partying at Tim Hortons Field for a Grey Cup. So let's just not turn this into what's crappy about Hamilton not getting something. And let's, you know, hey, I live in Hamilton and I am a driving distance away from both Toronto and Ottawa. So there's a really good chance that the next two Grey Cups, I will be there in person. And I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, I've said it before. I mean, I want the Grey Cup in Hamilton too. It's been since 1996. They deserve a Grey Cup, but Toronto is pretty damn close. So it'll be fine. They'll get it. And, you know, maybe not in 2018, but it'll be there, you know, within the next 5 years, I believe.
Yeah, I can't see this game not being here before we get into the 2020s. So let's just allay those fears for now, and that's the news for the week. So let's move on to the other games. Montreal and BC, the Lions found a way to go into Percival Molson Stadium and hand the Owls a loss. So to you, I ask this one question, and it pertains to the BC Lions. Do you think Manny Arsenault is the most disappointing player so far in 2015?
He has been a little bit disappointing. You know, he's a big name. He should be racking up the yards, getting touchdowns. He's a good receiver. But I don't know if you can say it's disappointing on him, because I don't think he's been given the chance. You know, I don't think he's been throwing the ball enough. You know, Lule's had a subpar year at best, and now they got Beck in there, and I don't know about him. So I think that he would be one of the top receivers in the league on a different team with a better quarterback.
I'm a big Manny Arsenault fan. I really, you know, when we were doing our fantasy draft back at the beginning of the season, I was really hoping to land him, and I didn't. But he just hasn't been good enough, and maybe part of that is due to the quarterbacking situation there. And Lule, you know, Lule will have one good game and then two stinkers, and now he's hurt, and I don't even think he's playing this upcoming week against Ottawa. I think
he's out 3 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, knee injury, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be John Beck there, and John Beck's not exactly, you know, the reincarnation of Danny McManus or anything, so it might be a tough go for Manny Arsenault. But I just expect him to be the focal point of that passing attack. And so far this season, he has one game over 100 yards, and it was in week two versus Ottawa, which was BC's first game. And since then, he's had games of 49 yards, a couple 51-yard games. There's a couple games where he's been under 25 yards, and he just hasn't really been the breakout player that I expected on that BC team. They have a good offensive coordinator there. They have two offensive minds in both, you know, OC George Cortez and Jeff Tedford. And I figured they would game plan to find a way to get the ball in Arsenault's hands, and they just haven't.
Yeah, their offensive line's playing great too. I think they have allowed the least sacks in the league this year, so the quarterbacks are getting time. He should have better numbers, that's for sure. Now what's with Pop keeping Marsh in the game? I mean, I never thought Marsh was any good, and he threw five picks in that game. He just looked terrible. So why didn't he yank him at half?
I don't know.
Stubborn?
Maybe he's stubborn. That might be the best way to put it. The five pick thing, you know what it reminded me of when I was watching it? You're a Canadiens fan, correct? Montreal Canadiens fan?
Yeah.
Do you remember when Patrick Waugh got into it with, what the heck was the coach's name?
I don't remember, but I know exactly what you're talking about. He told him he's never going to play for the Canadiens again.
Yeah, they kept him in there, and he gave up like eight goals or something.
Yeah.
And then he finally got yanked, and he went up to, was it Marcel Tremblay? Michel Trump? No. You know what? No point in me even trying to remember. But yeah, he goes up to him and says, I'm never playing here again. And then, what was it, a couple days later, they traded him to Colorado?
Yeah.
This is, that kind of reminds, like, at what point do you just say, give the kid, just get him out of there? You know what I mean? Like, there was no point. Five interceptions? Like, that's hard to do for any quarterback, professional, amateur, you know, throwing the ball around the backyard with a couple of friends. Like, whew, that's just ugly. And they have a guy.
They asked him at halftime, you know, are you going to make a change at quarterback? And he said, there's no point at this juncture. So I guess he's just stubborn, because what do they have to do to give, you know, Brandon Bridge a shot? You know, he couldn't have been any worse than what Marsh was.
If Brandon Bridge is not good enough to play when the starting quarterback has thrown a boatload of interceptions, why is he even on the roster then?
Yeah, exactly.
It makes no sense. I understand, you know, after we saw what Rakeem Cato was capable of doing in a bunch of games, it made sense why they went over Bridge and put Cato in there when they did. I'm a big Rakeem Cato guy. I think if given time, he can develop into a really good quarterback in this league. But yeah, Tanner Marsh, you know, that whole Marsh Madness thing, they talked about that during the game too. I don't know if you caught it, but they said, yeah, he had those, that wild comeback, but he had threw four interceptions in that game. And I think we talked about that last week too.
He's no good. He's garbage.
Enough of that. Let's, you know, if Jim Pop wants to keep playing Tanner Marsh, then they're just going to sink further and further out of playoff contention in the East and might cost themselves a crossover spot. So whatever you want to do, Jim Boy, that's on you, pal.
Yeah, I think that Cato was, they mentioned it, he was in Florida for personal reasons, so I don't think he's hurt or anything. So I think he should be back next week, and maybe, you know, the Alouettes can turn it around on offense. Well, I don't think they're even playing next week, though. So, but the
oh,
next
are they in a bye?
Okay. Yeah, I think Ottawa and BC play next week, and then it's all the rematches from this week. So Montreal has a bye.
Correct you are. So let's move on to the not a Labor Day Classic. I put out there, I think it was the day before the game, that we need to stop calling the Bombers-Riders game a Labor Day Classic because it's not played on Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And boy, did I take heat from a lot of Bombers and Riders fans, although it seemed to be that fans of every other team were like, well, yeah, Labor Day is Monday. So, you know, it's a great rivalry. I'm not taking anything away from that. It's, you know, it ranks up there with the Ticats and Argos and Stamps and Eskimos. But a Labor Day Classic, it is not if you play the Sunday before Labor Day. So let's just get that out there. And before I ask you my question, I do have a small question. Did you see Doug Brown's tweet about Brett Smith and Brian Brohm?
I did not.
Okay, so he put out a tweet saying, after seeing Brett Smith play, I'd rather have Brian Brohm. And I don't know if he put that out during the game or before the game, but whoo, boy, did people take him to task for that, and rightfully so, especially after what happened in that game where the Riders, you know, got their first win of the season, which I believe on this show a couple weeks ago I said they would do on Labor Day. They would get their first W against the Bombers. But yeah, Brown took a little bit of heat for that, deservedly so as far as I'm concerned, because Brian Brohm is nowhere near as good as Brett Smith. Brian Brohm still throwing a touchdown pass, and Brett Smith, I think, threw two or three in the game on Sunday. So let's knock it off with that nonsense, Doug Brown.
Yeah, Brian Brohm is, like, you know, he's not like overly terrible. He's just extra. Like, he's just ordinary. You know, he's not going to do anything. He might throw a couple first downs, but he's not going to score any touchdowns. He just doesn't have it. And Brett Smith, I think he has some potential. You know, he can scramble around. He throws a pretty good ball. You know, he moves his yardsticks. So to say that Brohm is better than Smith is just ridiculous. You know, Doug Brown is a very opinionated dude. So, but I think he thinks with his heart a bit more than his head sometimes.
It certainly seemed that way on this. So moving on, my question to you is, the Bombers won the toss to start the game and deferred to the second half. The way the game was going as halftime, the Riders, I think, had scored a couple touchdowns. Momentum seemed to have shifted towards Saskatchewan. I want to ask you, should the Bombers have taken the ball to start the third instead of taking the wind in the fourth?
That's a toughie, because I'm not sure how big a wind there was during that game.
I'm pretty sure it was swirling. You know, 30, okay. 40 kilometer winds. It was a big thing in the game. So it was definitely a decision that needed to sort of be thought about.
You know, I don't have a problem with it. You know, fourth quarter is a huge quarter. They felt that they were still in the game. It was still relatively close. I think their Riders pulled away in the second half. So I don't have a problem with that call. You know, having the wind in the fourth quarter is a big deal, especially in a place like Saskatchewan where there's swirling winds a lot of the time.
I just thought maybe getting the ball to start the third, like I said, momentum seemed to have shifted Saskatchewan's way. So I think getting the ball to start third might have been the more prudent move, just to maybe halt the momentum Saskatchewan had at that point. Because then, it was close. I don't have the halftime score here in front of me. But yeah, it was definitely still, Winnipeg was still in the game. And Winnipeg's points up to that point had come, at that point, I think every point in the game had come with the team having the win. So it's not that I think that they were wrong for taking the wind instead of taking the ball, but I just wonder if maybe that game might have played a little different if Winnipeg could have got some of that momentum back right away in the third quarter instead of kicking the ball off and letting Saskatchewan play with it for a bit before eventually the Riders just took over and just ended up making that game a massive blowout.
Yeah, they were screwed either way with Brohm behind center. So should the Bombers have put in Nichols at any point in the game?
Well, like you just said, Brohm was terrible, and I understand that Nichols had been there only a couple of days and probably hadn't really digested the playbook, but they couldn't have been any worse off with him in there, could they have?
No, I don't think so. Even with, you know, a limited playbook, Nichols might have done a better job than Brohm.
Brohm plays like he has a limited playbook, and he's been there now a year and a half, so I can't imagine Nichols would have been much worse. I get why they wouldn't play him, but I think at some point in that game, he should have been thrown in there even just to get some reps, because there's a good chance that he is their starter at some point before Willie comes back. And, you know, Brian Brohm is just bad.
Yeah, you got to feel bad for Bombers fans. I mean, if Willie doesn't go down, I think that they have a pretty good team over there. Just a lot of bad luck. I think O'Shea may be a little bit over his head right now, but I think he is a good coach and will be a good coach. So, you know, it's just been tough for fans in Winnipeg for so many years, and I wish they could turn it around.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing before you said it. The ineptitude of that franchise for pretty much the last two decades, with, you know, a smattering of decent records here and there and a couple Grey Cup appearances, has just been unfortunate. I do feel bad for Bomber fans. They deserve better, and I don't think there should be like, this isn't Saskatchewan. They don't deserve to fire these guys wholesale. I think you maybe give them one more season after this year to turn around, but something's got to change there. They just don't have it right now. So the second half of the Labor Day doubleheader today was between the Stampeders and the Eskimos, and the Stampeders won again. I didn't get to see a ton of this game because I was at the game here in Hamilton, so I missed most of the first quarter, I would say. But when I got home, they decided to show during the game this weird altercation between Dion Lacey and Bo Levi Mitchell at the coin toss. And I just got to ask you, what do you think Lacey was hoping to accomplish during that little brouhaha, or whatever you want to call it?
I guess he was trying to intimidate him, but you know, it wasn't a planned thing between all the Eskimos in the coin flip circle, or whatever you want to call it. I guess he was thinking intimidation, but it didn't work at all. It kind of looked a little silly. You know, Mitchell kind of laughed it off, so I don't think it accomplished anything in the game, so just a bit of silliness on his part.
He just looked like an idiot, to be perfectly honest with you. He's a special teams guy. He's not even a starter on defense. Like, I don't know what you're trying to do by sort of mean mugging the reigning Grey Cup MVP. It was just, I don't know, it just seemed silly to me and kind of unnecessary, and I don't know. You see things like that and you just wonder what's going through a guy's head at the time.
Yeah, like you said, special teams player. It's not like he was going to see Mitchell on the field, so I don't really understand what he was doing either. What's your thoughts on Franklin being pulled for Riley before, you know, Riley comes in? He's not 100%. He's pretty close, but not completely 100%. You think that maybe it was a little bit a rushed decision, risking his health a bit? What's your thoughts on that?
James Franklin, from what I saw, didn't really have a great game, but it seemed like maybe Chris Jones was making that Hail Mary type decision to try to win it. The game was close, so he was trying to win the game, and maybe he thought at that point, bringing in Mike Riley might spark the team, and you know, I think Riley drove him down for a field goal and what would have been a touchdown if, I believe, Deion Bailey it was, could have caught the pass. Funny story, it happened. My nephew was watching the game with me. He's just turned 5 years old and just gotten really into football. Been to a couple Ticat games, and he was having a bath and he came down. And he's like, "What did I miss in the game?" And I told him that Edmonton had switched quarterbacks. And his answer to that was just, "That's unacceptable." So I don't know if I necessarily agree with him, but there's the opinion of a 5 year old that is, you know, maybe he knew what he was doing, because the Eskimos didn't win that game. But yeah, it just seemed like maybe a desperation play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Make no mistake, Franklin was playing terrible. So I kind of understand where he's coming from. Bring Riley in. I think they were down by 6. So they, you know, they still win that game. But I understand it. I guess Riley is the guy going forward. There will be no Franklin starting when Riley is healthy. So we'll see what Riley does next week in a full game.
Yeah. Do you think this means that Riley is starting the rematch on Saturday?
Yeah, I think so. If they put him in now, he has another, what is it, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You know, they play on Saturday, so he has some more days to heal, and he should be the starting guy at the rematch at Commonwealth Stadium.
I'm thinking the same thing, man. I don't see any way in which he's not. They made this move now. I think he's got to be the guy going forward, and I think that if he is 95% healthy, this Eskimos team is going to be a lot better offensively. So I wasn't down on Franklin at all. I thought he had a great first game against the Argos, and like I said, I didn't see a ton of this game, but if you say that he wasn't playing very well, I will defer
really
to your
bad.
Opinion. Yeah, he was really
yeah,
bad?
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, it was
okay.
Bad.
Well, obviously, did they even score a touchdown today?
I don't think they did.
I don't think they did either. So,
and they just couldn't move the ball again. Franklin looked nervous, or
he looked like a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, you know, he's looked good coming in relief. He looked good against Toronto, and then he looked terrible against Calgary, and all that thought of, you know, maybe Nichols is the guy. Maybe he is. Maybe he does have a future, but Riley's going to start from here on out, I believe.
So let's move on to the upcoming Ticats game, which will be Friday night in Toronto, rematch with the Argos. The one thing that I can sort of come into this game thinking, I had a gut feeling that Hamilton would just blow the doors off the Argos on Labor Day. I don't have that feeling. I think this is going to be a much closer game, and I would not be shocked at all if the Argos came away with a victory.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to go with the blowout this week. You know, I said last week the Labor Day game was going to be close. Now I'm going to say that the rematch, they're going to kick the crap out of the Argos again.
Wow. Okay. So we're disagreeing on this one. Interesting. Is there any reason why you think that? Do you just think the Ticats are just that much? Like, let's be honest. We both believe the Ticats are better than the Argos, but do you think that they have their number? Is this, I'm kind of curious as to where you're coming from with this.
You've been talking about it a long time. We talked about it earlier. You think that the Argos aren't a great team. I think that they're just exposed now. I don't see them putting in a great performance against the Ticats on Friday. I just think that Harris is going to go downhill from here. We'll see Ray come in later in the season. Maybe it was a bit of a mirage how he played in the first quarter of the season. So I just don't see them even being close on Friday night at the Sky Dome.
I sort of look at it the opposite way, and just Hamilton hasn't been a great road team necessarily. They've won a few games on the road this year and looked, you know, they're 7-3, so they've obviously had their fair share of road victories and road successes. Like, just maybe until they start putting together a bunch of wins consecutively on the road, I'll be a little more high on them as a road team. I just been to too many of these road games in Toronto, especially where Hamilton should just run the doors off these guys and they just don't. So maybe it's cautious optimism on my part where, you know, if I go in thinking it'll be tight contest and they do blow out the Argos, I'll end up being happy. I don't know. Gut feeling. That's all I really got on this one.
Yeah, I think that it'll be pretty much a home game because I think the Ticats fans are going to travel pretty well.
Well, I'm going to be there, so.
Yeah, I think there'll be a large group of Ticat fans cheering on the team in Toronto on Friday, so it'll feel like a home game.
Yeah, that's a good point. That 2013 East Final is something I always bring up when talking about Ticats Argos games in Toronto. That was, if not a home game for Hamilton, it was at worst a neutral site game. That place was loud at every juncture of the game, and we could see something similar. This Ticat team is on a roll. So, you know, they have those hiccups every now and then. Maybe you're right. Maybe this will be a blowout. We'll come back here next week and be just as excited as we are this week. You got any bold predictions for this one? We're kind of flying by the seat of our pants here. We're a few hours after the game. Didn't get as much prep in as we would like. It's a little tough. The game that just happened is fresh in our minds. So anything that sort of sticks out to you as something you want to put your neck out on the line for?
Tasker had a good game today, 105 yards, but he didn't find the end zone. So I'm going to say he gets over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. Claros and him just have such a connection. I think they're going to find the end zone a couple of times next week.
Oh man, I hope you're right. I got Tasker on my fantasy team, and I talk about the fantasy team in here a lot. I guess I should give you your credit. You were the team that knocked me off the undefeated perch, so tip your imaginary cap, and good on you.
Yeah, I took you down. The trouble for me the whole season, I think, was I had 2 linebackers when you're supposed to have 3. One wasn't a starting linebacker. Now I have Alex Hoffman or whatever that's replacing...
Solomon Elamimian.
Yeah, so now I got 3 starting linebackers. I got a decent receiving corps, so hopefully I have a bounce back second half of the season and contend in the second half.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck to you. I'm still 9-1. We don't have this week's results finalized yet, so maybe when we record next week, I'll be 10-1 and we'll... I'll still be partying. But either way, I know I'm still in first place because I have like a 3-game lead on whoever's next. But people didn't come here for us to chit-chat about our fantasy teams. Ray Hawley today got essentially a standing ovation from the crowd in Hamilton in the fourth quarter. He had a big 40-yard run and then a nice 8-yard run that got him to the precipice of the end zone. And everyone was chanting his name and kind of hoping that he would get the ball to score a touchdown. Jeff Matthews got on the 1-yard plunge, which makes sense. You know, you get 1 yard to go. You tend to give it to the quarterback. But fans were chanting his name and he stood on the bench and he was pumped. So I'm going to say that Ray Hawley, I would like to go with 100 yards, but I'm not foolish. I'm going to say he gets 80 yards rushing and a touchdown. I think this might have been the game where he sort of put it all together. So let's see if the Ticats can take that run game they found today against Toronto and turn it into something a little more exciting going forward. Maybe it becomes part of the team's offense a lot more than it has been.
He seemed to be going with Hawley over Grigsby, so...
Well, Grigsby started today's game, but he was very ineffective, I found. I think he had something like 3 carries for half dozen yards or something. But they went away from it, and they got the big lead mostly due to the pass. It just seems like they're bouncing these guys around. Hawley looks like the guy that they want to go with. He was starting in there even when Grigsby was back in the lineup. So I'm thinking you're right. I think Hawley's the guy that they're going to go with going forward, at least until C.J. Gable's back, hopefully before the playoffs.
Fingers crossed for that, because he's such a big part of that offense. The offense is great, but if Gable's in there, it's just even that much more greater. So
yeah, it's more dynamic. It's
yeah,
they can do more things. The defenses of the opposing teams have to actually plan to stop the run. Like, just look at what he did against Saskatchewan in the only game that he's played the whole game in. Just awesome, and he's a difference maker back there. So the quicker he can get back, the better. I don't know if it's going to be anytime soon. He's been out now, I guess. It was against Toronto that he got hurt, so he's been out a little more than a month. So maybe we'll see him back at the tail end of the season and hopefully into the playoffs, and this offense can have an added dimension that'll just make them that much harder to beat.
Yeah, you just want to see him stay healthy. You know, any more injuries and you think they might be done. It's just been piling up and piling up. You just want to see him get back in the game and put together a streak of games without getting hurt.
So a little reverse of roles here. I'm the one who got the Twitter questions this week. We didn't get very many. We didn't really put a call out for questions because we were recording so soon after the game, and we've had a fair bit to talk about game wise. But we did get a couple of questions. One that I'm sure will lead to a little bit of a debate, and one that's kind of fun. So the first one comes from a regular contributor, Canes Eagles, and he says, do you see Tim Tebow on a CFL roster anytime soon? Tebow was cut by the Philadelphia Eagles in the final round of NFL cuts, and there's always talk about Tebow. He's on the Montreal Alouettes neg list, so there's always talk about him coming up and playing in the CFL. So why don't you take it away?
No, I don't see him making the commitment to come to the league. I don't see him start. Say if he was to come to the CFL, I don't think that he's going to start anywhere. So I don't think he wants to be a backup in Canada. You know, if he comes to the Alouettes, he's going to be behind Cato and Crompton, and he just doesn't have the accuracy. You know, everyone in the States thinks, oh, go to Canada and get reps, but he's not going to get any reps here. He's not going to be a starting quarterback in the CFL. So I don't know why they keep saying that. You know, it's probably them just putting their nose down at our league, but he's just not going to start. I don't think he wants to come up here. So no, I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening at any time. If he wants to work, he can go back to his college football gig, you know, announcing or being a commentator or whatever he was doing there. But I don't see him coming to Canada anytime soon.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Look, he comes to the CFL. He's not going to make as much as he would going back to ESPN doing color or whatever it is, analyzing the college football game. He's going to make way more at ESPN doing that. He's a very personable dude. He's very likable, I find. He's charismatic, so he's perfect for TV. He's also, you know, he's a pretty handsome guy, to be honest with you. So he's good to have on television, and I think there's, you know, like you said, he does not have a shot at being a starter up here, at least not right away, especially, like, all right, maybe if he went to Winnipeg, he could better than Brian Brohm, I would say, no matter how scattershot his arm might be. Brian Brohm has done nothing to impress, but he'd have to go to Montreal because that's who has his rights, and there's just not a spot there for him, and the money he would make up here, even as a high-profile name, like Michael Sam, it was reported, got something like $100,000 to sign with the Alouettes. And even if Tebow got that, that's a fraction of what he would make working for ESPN. So I don't ever see him, not just anytime soon, but ever suiting up in the CFL. All right. So the last question, this is from, and I apologize in advance for potentially butchering your name, Corey Nadiak. I hope I pronounced that right. And he asks, the Rod Black drinking game, have you played it?
I have not. I've heard about it. I think I even read the rules once. It seems like a very dangerous game to play, to be honest. Drink every time he says former NFLer or mentions someone's dad's name or something like that. I had never played it, and I don't want to play it because I don't want alcohol poisoning.
I don't drink a ton. I'm not a guy who really imbibes all that much alcohol. I enjoy a beer every now and then, and I like to watch the games. I don't like to be drunk, you know, 30 seconds into any telecast that Rod Black would be doing. So I have not played it either, and I don't really plan on playing at any time in the future. So maybe, you know, when I'm old and gray and have nothing left to do, and let's play the Rod Black drinking game. But I've not done it yet, and probably won't. So
I don't know if you'd be broadcasting still when you're old and gray there, Josh, because he's probably older than you, I'd say.
He is, but
20 years.
Look, everyone sees
Rod Black live forever.
Yeah, everyone's, you know, it's the people that you dislike that tend to defy Father Time. So Rod Black will probably be around much longer than you or I will be around, because that's just the way things tend to go. In Rod Black's defense, the one thing he does do, he does a lot of annoying things, and I know that, and I'm not a fan. And we may have even talked about this before, but the one thing he tends to do really well is the big call. Go back and listen to his calls on the Brandon Banks punt returns against Montreal in the East Final last year. They were great calls. They really captured the moment. So yeah, we tend to, you know, harp on Rod Black for all his anachronisms and his silly little things he likes to say, and yeah, former NFL, or I don't know how many times today he probably mentioned that Luke Tasker was the son of Steve Tasker. But when it comes to making the really big call, he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, he bugs me, but I don't think he bugs me as much as other people. He gets a lot of heat. He's not great at his job. You're right, he does make the occasional good call, but he does annoy me quite a bit. And sometimes I think he's just trolling the fans. Like, he's got to know that, like, he annoys so many people, but he just keeps doing what he does. So good on him, I guess.
So that's it then for this show. Don't forget, as always, that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You know, rate it, leave a comment. You know, we're always looking for constructive criticism. Mike's probably still looking for someone to call him an idiot and a jerk. I assume no one's called yet after last week?
No, not yet.
So if you want a question answered, you can hit Mike up on Twitter. Give him your Twitter handle, pal.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at @JoshSmith_82 and post a question on the comment section of 3 Down Nation if you so choose. So for this Labor Day edition of Podski Wee Wee, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.